Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. It's Politics Monday. And with 50 days before Election Day, we look at an aspect of our elections we used to take for granted, but which has now come under both a microscope and unfounded attacks: the security and integrity of our voting process. The questioning of the integrity of our elections stems from Donald Trump, not just his unfounded and provably false assertions that the 2020 election was stolen from him, but his refusal to say he would accept the result had he lost to Hillary Clinton in 2016. Ever since, those on the right, including most if not all MAGA Republicans, have, without proof, repeatedly questioned our elections, alleging various forms of fraud, non-citizen voting, and elections officials willing to turn a blind eye to cheating. The result has been diminishing confidence in the accuracy of elections and threats against those who administer them, many of whom are volunteers simply trying to do what they view as their civic duty. Perhaps the light in all of this darkness comes from a new survey conducted by Catawba College that shows most North Carolinians are confident their vote will be accurately counted this November, but they do have concerns about their safety at the polls. So let's explore that. Dr. Chris Cooper is here. He's a professor of political science and director of the Public Policy Institute at Western Carolina University. And Ben Thompson has been covering this as an anchor at WCNC-TV and host of their Flashpoint program on Sunday mornings. Welcome to you both. Welcome back.
Happy Monday.
Yeah. Thanks for having us.
And later in the program, we will be joined by Karen Brinson-Bell, Executive Director of the North Carolina State Board of Elections. Chris, let me start with you. Is there anything in the historical record surrounding presidential elections in the modern era that would give people legitimate cause for concern about the integrity of our elections?
Yeah, short answer, no. Not in North Carolina and not nationally, right? I mean, the notion that there is some sort of a massive voter fraud going on is never been proven, never been shown, never been demonstrated. Is there a one-off or a two-off, you know, random people voting in the wrong place? Sure. But as far as taking over a presidential election, somehow hacking into computers across multiple states that use multiple systems that have different counties that report in different ways, I mean, it just boggles the mind to think how that would happen, and it has not.
So, since I've already said it, I'm going to say it again. I'm going to ask you about the accuracy of what I said. Would it be accurate to say that the mistrust that some have over election security and the accuracy of the outcome, the vote total, has been mostly due to false aspersions cast by Donald Trump and his enablers? Or is there actually some legitimate concern in some parts of the country, in some precincts, with some voter elections boards, that there's something going on? Or is it just politics in these highly divided times?
Yeah, I mean, I would not put the whole thing at the feet of Donald Trump. I mean, this kind of distrust doesn't just get created overnight by one political figure. Certainly he has fanned the flames, but there have been politicians for all of American history who have questioned the outcome of election results. And of course, in our own backyard, right, probably the one example of true election fraud recently was in the 9th Congressional District right here in North Carolina. So it isn't to say that we shouldn't think about elections, that we shouldn't have questions, that we shouldn't demand proof from time to time, or that something can't happen. But actually, I think our 9th Congressional District is a perfect example of the system working. Like, we caught this before we put the wrong person into office. So I think it's actually an example of the system working, not necessarily of the system failing, as it's often presented.
But using the 9th Congressional District as an example, and there have been other examples in other parts of the country where similar things have happened, yep. Would there ever have been an instance where the wrong person got in? Or are we talking about a minuscule number of votes that result from election tampering like we witnessed in the 9th District?
Yeah, I think we're talking for the most part about a minuscule number of votes. And what I find most ironic is that if you were to sort of find the one off the types of offices where this kind of thing could matter, it would be at the local level, right? So I live in Silva, North Carolina, a tiny little town. We had two people on our town council who were elected by coin toss. In other words, it was a tie ball game, and then we had to go to a coin toss to select the winner. If you wanted to find the place where a one-off person voting in the wrong precinct could matter, it'd be in the local elections. Yet nobody ever brings that up, right? It's always about the federal offices. And I just think that sort of demonstrates that what we're really talking about isn't what's actually happening. It's the sort of perception of what might be happening, perhaps, that stops some outcome that people want from occurring.
And there are many, Ben, who are concerned about what appear to be attempts to manipulate elections in terms of control of who can vote, demand for voter IDs at the polling place, making it difficult in some cases to determine what form of voter ID will be acceptable when you get there. The demand to purge voter rolls of voters for various reasons to allow partisan observers to be at the polling places now in certain spaces and come into these voting spaces. Are those legitimate concerns about voter safety and about the election outcome?
Well, I'll leave it to somebody else to say whether or not they're legitimate, but they are happening. And I mean, just recently, like I believe it was last week, you had a lawsuit about whether or not UNC Chapel Hill students should be able to use their digital university ID cards to vote. The RNC and state Republicans argue that digital IDs do not meet state law. But under the state law, it does say student ID. So there's some debate about what then qualifies and what doesn't qualify, because I mean, you're still talking about your driver's license, a non-operator ID, a passport. You can even get a free voter ID at this point if you want to at your local board of elections, and certain other government IDs. So there's a variety of things out there. They're now challenging whether a student ID on a phone or a device qualifies.
Yeah, and there have also been allegations that non-citizens have been voting, which of course is illegal. But that is one of the reasons that people have said our southern border has become so porous, so that Democrats can use those people to vote for them. I'm not sure they would know a Democrat from a Republican, these people streaming over the border, but that's what the allegation is. Any foundation for that concern? Ben.
I mean, no, honestly, here's the secret. If you actually look at the actual cases of, say, voter fraud, I mean, and even if you go with like the Heritage Foundation, their numbers, they found now, I believe, eight cases in 2022. And even those eight cases are things like folks who are ineligible to vote, or folks who voted a second time, or there's something wrong with registration. They're honestly very mundane, boring reasons. They're not what you're talking about, like in the ninth congressional district of some sort of conspiracy or something like that. In most of these cases, they're kind of, I don't want to say it doesn't matter, but they're one-offs in most cases. That's what they are. They're boring one-offs in a lot of them.
Chris, a lot of these moves to strengthen voter ID, to purge voter rolls, to make it more difficult to vote in some cases, to allow partisan observers to come into voting spaces, are efforts on the part of at least one party to allegedly ensure the integrity of the vote. But people on the other side look at that as ways to do exactly the opposite, prevent people from voting and therefore tip the scales. How should we view that?
I think it depends. The devil's in the details, right? On all of these offices. I mean, and I also take most folks at their word. If they say, look, I'm going to feel better if we have partisan observers there. Now, I don't think that is necessarily a bad thing. And if what results in the end is people feeling better about our electoral process, I think I kind of welcome it, actually. And I think we see this, right? Study after study shows that the more you know, the better you feel. So I'm a small part of this group that goes around the state trying to talk to people about election security, election integrity, this commission on the future of elections in North Carolina. And the more, what we find is the more people learn, the better they feel, right? If you actually can look at a voting machine, if you can actually see how they're kept on offline, if you understand that they're not connected to the internet, if you can get your questions answered, you're going to feel better about the process. So I'm definitely in the camp that more information is better. And so the partisan observers, I'm not sure necessarily a bad thing for what's going to happen in democracy as far as constitutional amendments to keep non-citizens from voting. I think that's up to the voters to decide. There's not a lot of evidence this is happening. I don't see a great harm here. But again, ultimately up to the voters to decide if that is a solution in search of a problem or the solution to a real problem.
Ben.
It's funny he brings up familiarity and knowledge of a situation and a dynamic, because I think about, I have spent way too many late election nights with Michael Dickerson over at the Board of Elections as counts came in. And I say that because I can say just anecdotally for myself, and I've relayed this to not just friends and family, but also viewers at home. In that time, you see firsthand how dedicated these election workers are and how seriously they take their jobs. And every voting site has bipartisan people there. Every board of election has bipartisan people there. And these people, I mean, it's sort of like a nurse or a doctor wanting to do harm to their patient. It just goes against every fabric and grain in their body. It's just, they're just not, that's not how they're built. Are there some bad people? Probably so. But I can tell you in 25 years of TV news, I've not found those people when I've covered these elections. These election workers are dedicated. They're serious. And they take their role in our democracy very seriously.
And I want to say the same is true of the media, about which aspersions have been cast. And I've never met anybody in any newsroom who doesn't take their job seriously. It's almost a sacred trust in many ways to get to the truth, whatever that truth may be. Despite the national conversation, Chris, about the integrity of the election machinery, a recent poll by Catawba College and YouGov shows that 75% of North Carolinians are very or somewhat confident that their vote will be accurately counted in their county in the upcoming election. 71% are very or somewhat confident in the integrity of the 2024 election as a whole in North Carolina. So what does that say either about voters or about how our elections have been traditionally run?
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting, right? This is my favorite finding actually from this poll, is that 75% think your vote in your county is going to be accurately counted, 71% in North Carolina, 61% outside of North Carolina. So I think what Ben talked about, right, you know, talking about Michael Dickerson, talking about the kinds of people that are actually running elections in North Carolina, these are our friends and neighbors. We trust these people, right? You go to the polls and you see them. It might be, you're going to see Democrats, you're going to see a Republican, and you're going to feel pretty good about it. But there's been this demonization of what's happening farther from home, right? And so I think what we need to do is, folks who care about this kind of thing, is to educate people that, yes, you feel good about voting in your community. Why do you think other communities are worse, right? Why do you think that somehow the people in, you know, Arizona or in Nebraska or in Montana are somehow worse than the friends and neighbors that you're seeing? I mean, this is actually, I think, a very heartening effect that, the more you see, the more you know, the more you trust. This is the good news story here.
So what's behind, I only have a minute left in the segment, Chris, but what's behind this, transmitting this idea that our elections are fraudulent and there are bugs under every rock?
Yeah, I mean, look, politicians are going to do that to try to further their own agenda. We've seen some Democrats
do it. But they didn't used to do that.
I'm not sure that's entirely true. I think it was not to the same scale that it is now, but politicians for a long time have been crying foul. And we certainly had election lawsuits in the 11th Congressional District where I am today, for example, in 1982. Like, this kind of thing has happened. It just hasn't been at the scale that it is now. The year 2000 brought all that into focus for folks, and it's actually gotten to be sharper since then.
So we're going to talk about what is causing this confidence among North Carolina voters in the system. That's a piece of good news. But there's also concerns about voter safety. And we'll talk about that when we come back as well. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at mazdaofsouthcharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about election integrity and confidence in the process, or lack of same, with Dr. Chris Cooper, professor of political science and director of the Public Policy Institute at Western Carolina University, and Ben Thompson, who's an anchor at WCNC-TV and host of their Flashpoint program. We were talking, Ben, just before the break about how people locally have confidence in our machinery, our apparatus to count the votes. They believe the vote outcome will be accurate, but they do have this suspicion about other parts of the country. And Dr. Cooper mentioned that he was traveling around the state with people like former Charlotte Mayor Jennifer Roberts and Bob Orr, former state Supreme Court Justice, holding these town hall meetings to explain the process and to increase confidence in our election. So do you have a take on why we have this distrust of what might be happening elsewhere if we believe our vote is going to be accurately counted?
I think it's part of a much larger trend over the last 15 years, because it's not just elections, it's institutions. So it's election workers. It is the media. It's teachers, it's doctors and nurses. It was postal workers back in 2020. There is an undermining of our institutions, and our election system is part of that. Now, some of it's well-founded, not necessarily the election part, but we had the Great Recession. People were giving loans they had no business having. The pandemic had a wildly erratic response to it, depending on what state you lived and what county you lived in. So there have been instances in the last 20 years. You could go to the Iraq War. There's plenty of instances where our institutions have let us down. People have a good skepticism. As a journalist, I will tell you, skepticism is a good thing and a healthy thing. But I'm not sure that some of it has not been politically motivated by some people for their own advantage.
Chris, this is kind of like what happens with public schools. Public schools get a bad rap unless your child's in a public school, and 9 times out of 10, you're going to think that public school and that school teacher in that classroom is wonderful because you know them. The same is true of Congress. Congress gets a bad rap because they don't do anything, but your congressperson or your senator you like because he did something for you, or you can see the results of what they've been doing in your community. This survey reveals different levels of trust depending upon whether you identify as a Democrat or as a Republican or as an independent. 83% of Democrats expressed confidence in the integrity of the election process here in North Carolina, while 69% of independents and only 63% of Republicans did. Are Democrats naive, or are Republicans and independents more susceptible to propaganda that tells them not to trust elections?
Yeah, it's a great question, right? I mean, we saw that throughout this poll, that almost, regardless of the question, Democrats, and we asked it all, Michael asked it all sorts of different ways, Michael Bitzer, of course, but it seemed like consistently Democrats trusted elections and trusted our process more than Republicans. So there's a couple things going on. One is exactly what Ben talked about a second ago. In general, trust in institutions has declined. Democrats tend to trust institutions more than Republicans do across the board. And I think the other thing is there's a source credibility problem for both parties, right? You've got Donald Trump certainly calling elections integrity into question. And we should note, certainly he's just calling the presidential election, right? He's fine with the outcome of the United States Congress, for example. So somehow we're supposed to believe that election integrity is a problem only for the top of the ticket, but the bottom of the ticket's just fine. And then you also have Democrats listening to their sources too. My gut is if you were to flip these things, if you were to have Kamala Harris, or if you were to have Joe Biden, or if you were to have Nancy Pelosi questioning election results and Donald Trump saying, I support them, then you would see a flip of that, right? So it's a source credibility problem. Both parties are listening to their leaders, the people who they trust, and they are following.
I want to talk about something that I didn't know about, and I think you've been reporting on this, Ben, that polling places, which are generally populated mostly by volunteers, many of them older, often retired, who are doing their civic duty, but the election boards, the people that hire those volunteers, the people that actually run these elections and make sure that the voting machines are accurate and that the voters being counted accurately, these people are professionals, and you've reported a lot of turnover in those positions in North Carolina. You say that two-thirds of this state's 100 counties have new elections directors, or relatively new ones. Yeah. Why?
Yeah, and Karen Brinson-Bell is going to join us in a few minutes, and she can speak further to this. But, yeah, I mean, of the state's 100 counties, 63 of those county election directors are new in the past 5 years. 34 are brand new headed into this. And, you know, Karen, when I talked to her about this, she was honest and she said, listen, our profession has been under attack the last few years like it has never been before. And when you have these election directors who, again, everyone I've ever met who is one, it takes it so seriously. Sometimes they're a little bit nerdy, but they have the American flag up. I mean, like, they take this stuff seriously. They didn't buy in for this. This is not what they signed up for. So whether it was through resignation or retirement, when you have nearly two-thirds of our people charged with looking over our county elections, leaving the job within a five-year period, I mean that's huge. And all positions have been filled at this point. We are operating full staff. But that's an indictment of where we are as a society.
Well, this turnover is troubling because, as I think she told you in your conversation with her, Karen Brinson-Bell, that most of these positions are usually held by lifelong public servants. And now we have all this turnover. And she's been scared. They've been scared away by what you call poisonous political rhetoric targeted at poll workers. We've heard about this in other precincts and other areas around the country. Has that been happening here? Are these people getting death threats? Are their families being threatened? Are they being followed, etc., as some people are in other voting areas of the country?
I think they are definitely getting harassed. I'll let Karen speak to any specificity of what they're seeing, but they're definitely getting harassed to a level they had never seen before or never sort of witnessed before. And the thing is, I mean, they're all full staff now, 100 counties each have an election director, but what happens then 4 years from now or 5 years from now? I mean, Dickerson's been over there at Board of Elections here in Mecklenburg County for nearly 30 years, I think. Yeah. I mean, what Karen has said to me, the state Board of Elections chair, that she's because it's going to continue to be a problem as long as our politicians see this as a favorable way to move forward. Turnover is just going to be perpetual, and you're not going to have these long-standing experts who know what they're talking about wanting to put up with it.
And evidently this extends to voters themselves, Chris, because voters in that Catawba College YouGov poll survey, despite their confidence that their vote will be counted accurately, expressed concerns about voter safety at the polls. 48% said they were concerned for the safety of voters casting ballots. Has that ever been a concern in North Carolina, or for that matter, nationwide, ever before?
I mean, it has in the, you know, late 1800s and the early 1900s before we actually went to the Australian ballot, which is what we call, right, this private way in which we count ballots now. You used to be able to actually see the card, right? So you'd walk in and you'd have like a yellow card would say that you're voting for one party, or a blue card might say you're voting for another. People were very scared about intimidation then. No one listening to this experienced that, right? So I think your implication of your question is a good one. In our lifetimes, no, this is new. This is scary. And whether it's real or not, right, whether we're actually seeing this many threats or not is one question. But the fact that people are perceiving it, the fact that people are thinking that it's possible is, I think, worrisome for those of us who care about democracy in North Carolina, democracy in the United States.
Karen Brinson-Bell is executive director of the North Carolina State Board of Elections, and she has joined us this morning. Good morning, Karen. Thank you for being here.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
We were just talking with Chris Cooper about the Catawba College YouGov poll that shows that although North Carolina voters have great confidence in the integrity of the election and confidence that their vote will be counted accurately, they're not so confident about their safety at the polls. 48% said they were concerned about the safety of voters at the polls. Are those fears by voters justified? Have they filtered down simply from the, what we're hearing about poll workers' fears?
I do think it's a lot of the rhetoric that's been in the election space for the last 5 years or so, really, definitely the past three or four, that is influencing the polls and even, you know, some of what we're experiencing in our elections profession. You know, we are trying to mitigate matters. We're making sure that voters understand what the processes are, the electioneering buffer zone and where that ends and starts and so forth. We are working with our law enforcement partners. By North Carolina law, law enforcement cannot be present at voting sites, but they can be called in if we need their assistance to keep the peace or to deal with a disruption that might occur. Otherwise, you might see them like auxiliary units or something doing traffic control, but we hope that it stops there. We've had a few instances in the past where we'll say parades or other attempts to block traffic. We've had in 2020, there was a protest that took place away from a voting site that spilled into our early voting site in one county. But you know, for the most part, our voting sites are safe and secure, but we are asking for civility. And so that everyone, no matter what your position, political ideology, can exercise your right to vote. That's our country. That's our democracy.
We were talking with Ben Thompson from WCNC-TV, who's still with us, a moment ago about the significant turnover that the elections boards have experienced over the whole state. 65 of the state's 100 counties have had turnover. You do have full staffs, I'm told, but what's the impact of this turnover over with all these newcomers coming in who have never run elections before? Are you worried about the experience level and the training level of these officials and how it might impact the outcome?
I don't have time to worry. We're just going to put our energy forward and make sure that we get the job done. You know, we have had turnover. The whole elections profession has, but North Carolina certainly has not been immune to it. I'm sure Ben filled you in that we are, you know, 63 changes in county election directors since 2019. Some of those counties are on their second or third change in election director, which
is that because of fear over threats?
You know, I think the environment is contributing to that. We have directors who said they'd see us through another presidential, but came to a point where they had enough years in to retire, and they said the fuel is just not in the fuel tank, and this isn't the profession that they started out in 20, 25, 30 years ago. And so, you know, for that reason, there are some who are leaving. There are some who have gotten into the profession and realized that for the sacrifices, the hours, for the, you know, the rhetoric that's thrown at us now, that the pay's not there. And then you've got folks who, you know, it's in their blood. I've been in this 18 and a half years, and I recognize many of the faces who are long-serving election directors, the 40-some who have stuck with it. And, you know, we are just dedicated. And that's the thing. Folks need to realize that, you know, whether they're new to the profession or have been in this for a long time, you know, at the heart of it, we're election professionals. We understand that our job is to ensure that every eligible voter is able to exercise their right to vote and what it takes to get us there. And that's security, that's logistics, that's coordination of voting sites and people to work those sites and train them effectively. The many hats that election officials wear is another reason why it's hard to find folks that fit this role. But we have been fortunate. There will be about 34 county election directors that this will be their first presidential election as the director. They may have some elections experience, but being at the helm is a very different thing. Yeah. And I've been there and I sympathize with them and can identify with what they're going through. And so we've really focused in on not just the new directors, but all directors to provide them with as much training, as much communication, as much guidance as we possibly can so that we can have uniform elections, rebuild some of that lost institutional knowledge, and make sure that, you know, really at, when the day is done, we want elections in North Carolina to go as smooth as possible, to be the best experience for the voter. And when those voters are voting, be it in Sampson County or Rowan County, that it's a similar experience because of how we try to uniformly conduct elections.
So I've done this program for a long time, and every election cycle we've had people on like you and local elections and directors and people who understand how the machinery of elections work vis-a-vis the voting machines. And we've talked about the security of those machines over time. That used to be the concern. How do I trust a computer to register my vote correctly? Has it touched the internet? All of those questions were answered. No, these machines don't touch the internet. They are audited so that to make sure that what you say, that you, what the vote, you vote for X, it comes out X on the other side. But you told Ben Thompson in an interview that he conducted with you that your department is chronically underfunded and using software developed in 1998. Isn't that a legitimate cause for concern? I mean, if I was operating software on my computer that was written in 1998, it would likely not work very well on a modern computer and would also be riddled with security concerns and flaws and backdoor openings that didn't exist then but do now. So how do you explain that you're stuck with this old software?
Great questions, and let me draw some distinctions. So when we're talking about our voting equipment versus the State Election Information Management System, we call it SEIMS. Those are two different systems. Beginning in 2006, North Carolina implemented, we were really, you know, one of the, at the forefront states when it came to voting systems and our certification program. We meet federal standards, we meet state standards. There's a bond that any voting system that gets certified in North Carolina must post for the cost of a new election if the cause is a voting system error. We've not had to enforce that, but it's there if we need to. We do the logic and accuracy testing before every election. So that's when we make sure that every position, every contest, that the tabulators and the software are tabulating correctly. That's public. So if people want to see it, they can see how we, you know, bake the bread, you know, put the ingredients in and get this going. We also do a post-election audit where we do random sampling of election day precincts, early voting, absentee, depends on, you know, the random selection to make sure that those tabulators did count correctly. And we do that by doing a hand count of those sample selections. And we've been doing that since 2006. And throughout all of this, none of that voting system is connected to the internet. Now, separately, we have the State Election Information Management System. That's the system that's been around since 1998. It's more about the GUI interface and how our folks interact with it, but we have managed to secure it. We've done that mostly through federal funds.
We have to take a break. I'm sorry, Karen. And GUI is short for Graphic User Interface. It's not sticky. We'll come back with more in a moment. Stay with us. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on Listener Funded, 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about election integrity and the security of the vote and your security while you are at the polls voting with Dr. Chris Cooper, professor of political science and director of the Public Policy Institute at Western Carolina University. Ben Thompson is an anchor for WCNC-TV and host of their Flashpoint program. And Karen Brinson-Bell is executive director of the North Carolina State Board of Elections. There's been a lot of aspersions cast, Karen, about mail-in ballots and absentee voting. I think we all know where those aspersions are coming from, so we don't need to point fingers. But talk to me about how we ensure in North Carolina that these mail-in or absentee ballots are in fact valid, that those people casting those votes, A, have a right to cast those votes, and that they were actually cast by the people who claim to be casting the vote. In other words, it's not your uncle filling out these ballots, it's you.
Well, if you don't mind, Mike, before we get to that question, I do want to wrap up where I was on the state election information management system before the break.
And we're so back to GUI, are we?
Yeah, we're back to GUI. I've said that it looks more like Atari than anything that we have on our smartphones these days. But the reality is that it's an in-house system. That means we're able to put in extra protection. It's just the logic and the programming of it is very antiquated. And when other state agencies have moved over to new software and systems that are, you know, six figures or more, we've asked the legislature for about $8 million to upgrade our system at no cost to the counties. It's within our state law that we provide that to the counties. And this is everything from the voter registration module to the candidate filing module to the election results.
What's the answer been to that?
We did receive about 2/3 of the funding that we need.
It seems to me that Republicans who are so concerned about election integrity might be concerned about funding the elections machinery accurately and adequately.
I would agree. And that's why we continue to make the ask. That's why we'll ask for the full funding, especially when we're just talking about what's a drop in the bucket for everything else. But in doing that, we can also ensure, in the meantime, I can say to the North Carolinians, we have multi-factor authentication to log into that system. We have firewalls in place. We have secured networks that we have used our federal funding to make sure that those things are in place.
So let me race through some nuts and bolts very quickly because I don't want to run out of time because there are a lot of voter concerns out there. And I do want to talk about the importance or the integrity of the mail-in or absentee ballots. How do you ensure that they were accurately cast by people who should be allowed to cast them and not by somebody posing as somebody else?
So with those mail-in ballots, let's start with just the process of requesting. There is an official form that must be completed. You can't send in something on a napkin or a paper towel. It's going to be on the official request form. We've set up a portal on our state board website, ncsbe.gov, that's the most efficient way for people to do that because it's going to prompt them to fill out every field. With whether it's the paper form or the portal, they're going to provide their information. They're going to provide, for example, the last four of their social so that we can confirm that that's even them asking for it in the system before we mail it out. Then once it's received by the voter, they themselves are going to complete the ballot and sign that they were the person who did so. They're going to have two witnesses. Most states do not have a witness requirement. North Carolina not only has one, but they require two witnesses or a notary. Both cases are confirming that that was the voter who marked their ballot and put it into that envelope. And then now, in this election and starting in 2023, we have voter ID. And if someone, even an absentee by mail voter, is going to be required to place a photocopy of that ID in a pocket of that return material, or they're going to put in a section form that says they could not complete the photo ID or they don't have a way to make a copy of that photo ID.
Because of a state Supreme Court ruling that the ballots had to be reprinted, these mail-in ballots reprinted to remove Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s name from the ballot, they're going out late. Will there be a grace period to get them back in, or does the due date remain the same?
The due date remains the same. There was nothing about the court's decision that was about a grace period. The law changed, and the North Carolina deadline is absolute. County boards of elections must receive that ballot by 7:30 p.m. election day, so November 5th. So we're even encouraging people, you can request up until October the 29th, but that is not much turnaround for us to get it to you and back to us through the mail. So we're encouraging if you request late, get it back to an early voting site or to the County Board of Elections. And when you do drop it off in person, it has to be the voter or a near relative. And that's another security measure that's in place when it comes to who's casting that ballot by mail in North Carolina.
Chris, Robert Kennedy Jr. Fought very hard to get his name on the ballot. Then he fought very hard to get his name off the ballot once he decided to throw his support to Donald Trump. Would his name being there or his name being removed have any measurable impact on the outcome of this election?
In terms of the winners and losers?
Yeah.
Presidency, you know, I mean, the short answer is an unsatisfying one, which is I don't know, right? But there is this general, there's this idea that I'm reading and hearing a lot that him getting off would necessarily benefit Donald Trump. And I'm not sure that's true, right? And so there's a couple of reasons I say that. One is many of these folks were turning out to vote for Robert F. Kennedy Jr. They wanted some alternative to the two-party system, fair or unfair. They may just stay home. The other piece of data I've been looking at lately is the very small number of polls that ask people about RFK Jr., but also ask people who they prefer for the Council of State Offices, right? We have 10 of these Council of State Offices up in North Carolina in 2024. And if you dig into these crosstabs, the really wonky stuff of these polls, it's a small number of people. But what you tend to see is those RFK Jr. people say they're actually going to vote for Democrats for many of these Council of State offices. Put all that together, what it says to me is, I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm not taking it as a fait accompli that this is somehow going to be a boon to the Donald Trump campaign.
So let's talk about voter ID, because there have been a lot of questions swirling around voter ID. We have an email from Suzanne about her 89-year-old mother. So let's get that question answered in a moment. But what forms of ID are acceptable at the polls in this election, Karen?
There are quite a number of IDs that our state law allows for and that we have approved for voters. And most will show their driver's license, but there's the ability to show passport, tribal IDs, veteran IDs, and student IDs, and some government employee IDs. All of that is available on bringitnc.gov, the website that we have set up especially for voter ID information. If someone's 65 or older and had a valid driver's license before they turned 65, they don't have to worry about whether it's expired or not. They can still use that. So to your listener who wrote in about her 89-year-old mother, we probably have a way around or help her.
Well, let me share with you her email. She says, my 89-year-old mother has an expired driver's license and an expired passport. She doesn't travel or drive anymore. It is my understanding that she will have to go to the DMV to get a photo ID. I don't think she'd be able to get an appointment prior to the election. That's a fact.
valid concern.
She is not very mobile and voted absentee in the past couple of elections. How should she proceed to vote? Should she have an opportunity to vote?
So it sounds like her driver's license that she did have is probably sufficient. But if she's still concerned about that, we have a few other options that do not require folks to go to the DMV. They can go to their county board of elections and get a free ID. We look them up in the system, make sure that they're the registered voter, and then we take a photo right there and put it onto a voter ID card that's used for voting purposes only, and they can use that. There's also the ability to complete an exception form. We talked about that a little bit with the absentee voter, but that is possible for the in-person voter too, where they indicate that there's a reasonable impediment of why they were not able to get their ID or have it with them. And so that probably is a case with Suzanne's mother and
then
many voters.
You spoke a little while ago about this kerfuffle over the use of UNC Chapel Hill digital IDs. These are IDs that people carry around on their phones, as most people do with a lot of different documents today. And there's some question about whether they meet the standards of the law enacted by the General Assembly, which requires IDs to be one of several forms of tangible items. I would argue that this phone is tangible, but maybe not. So where does that stand, Ben?
There is Oh, I'm sorry. That was Ben. Okay.
Actually, Mike's the boss around here, but I'm actually curious, Karen, as to what, can I ask her a question? Is that going to
sure, rules? Go ahead.
Because Karen, I'm curious what you think about this, because this lawsuit was brought last week. And also, let me just say, I think we as a state are moving towards allowing photo IDs on phones, like starting next year after that. So your driver's license can be on your phone starting in a year or two. But anyway, so Karen, what are your thoughts on that?
So I had to put forward a recommendation. Staff and I go through an approval process whenever we're presented with a request to approve an ID for a university, college, community college, or government employment. And so we have a criteria that's set forth in law that we put forward and adopted as a state board. And once UNC Chapel Hill put the expiration date visible on that digital ID, then it met the criteria. We had had some other public and private universities in North Carolina to submit digital IDs, but they did not meet all the criteria. UNC Chapel Hill actually did, and that's why we were able to put that forward to the board as an approval. There was an objection, and so that's why the state board voted in the majority to approve that form of ID. We'll see what the courts say, but, you know, as our interpretation, you know, it's an ID. It is an acceptable card. It is what is primarily used at UNC Chapel Hill. Yeah. And so that is why we were able to, you know, consider that. And I think we all need to keep in perspective that the vast majority of voters are going to use their driver's license. So when we're talking about a digital ID that's used at UNC Chapel Hill, that's permitted for voting, it's permitted for other uses, you know, probably for discounts around the campus and so forth. You know, they're going to display that just like they would display what was in their wallet, not their digital wallet, but maybe their physical wallet. And, you know, and it's going to be a very small portion of people who would even use that type of ID.
So the State Board of Elections recently reprimanded a Henderson County election official for spreading false and misleading statements to state lawmakers and advocating for Republicans to win the 2024 election. Linda Reebuck sent an email to lawmakers in August warning of a, quote, concerted effort to turn Henderson County blue, further stating, "I want to strongly state my belief that if you do not intervene immediately, either legislatively or legally, we are going to lose NC to the Dems in November, which will likely mean we lose the country." That's emblematic of the divide we face in this country today. What does a reprimand of this official entail?
I'm really glad you're asking this question. So, you know, as the executive director for the agency, I found out about the letter. There were actually some legislators who asked some county directors about information within it. Once we realized that there was false information within that, we felt compelled to correct the record because it had gone out to, I believe, 29 different legislators, not just the two that represent her. And I, you know, she did identify that she serves on the County Board of Elections. So in some, to some degree, she was not representing the position of the board, but she was identifying herself in that capacity. And that's why we felt the need to set the record straight.
So how is she reprimanded?
The actual way that a board member, it's the complaint process. If there's a complaint filed against her, which this happens from time to time about political activity, especially of county board members, that would be heard by the state board. And so, you know, what I did was to just try to set the record straight in the letter that we sent.
So is she an outlier, or are there a lot of people, do you think, who have similar beliefs working in elections?
We have to make sure we talk about that we have county board members, and then we have the election professionals working in the county offices. Five members are appointed in each county. The chair is appointed by the governor, and the four members are by recommendation of the political parties, that being the Democrat and the Republican Party, because they are the largest two parties. Those come before the county, before the state board, and then the state board appoints them. And so they're not working full time. They are more a quasi-judicial board, but they do take an oath. And that's what's really key, is that we expect all five county board members and all five state board members to uphold their oath. When they do not, and we had a situation just a few years ago where two members of the Surrey County Board of Elections were removed based upon a complaint that we received and the state board heard, because they were not willing to certify an election that they had no evidence had not been carried out correctly.
So, which leads me to this question. It's an email. I have a very short amount of time. I only have about a minute and a half left. Is there a reason to be concerned about our electors confirming the election results? I know there is concern in Georgia and Arizona and probably a couple of other states. What about here?
I think we are in good shape just because of the way that our boards are made up, the oaths that they take, and the way that our law is written.
And some jurisdictions have allowed poll watchers or partisans into the polling places to observe what's going on. I'm just curious, from a voter's perspective, What are they allowed to do? How close are they allowed to get to me? Can they look over my shoulder while I talk to the person telling them my name and address? Can they follow me into the voting booth and look over my shoulder as I watch, as I vote? What are the rules governing those people, those partisan poll watchers?
So observers have been in place for decades in our state, and they have been in proximity to be able to hear that person check in and state their name and address, which is something required of everyone when they present themselves to vote in person. What has changed is the ability of the observer to go more into the polling place area and so forth, but they cannot get close enough to see how someone votes. They are also wearing an identifying badge or name tag that says that they are an observer, and the precinct officials can, you know, reprimand them to some extent and ask them to step back. They can also dismiss them if they continue to break the rules. So I don't feel like voters should be concerned about this. I'd say if anything, the observers are there to observe what the precinct officials are doing. And so we've been working closely with them about what those rules and regulations are.
Karen Brinson-Bell is executive director of the North Carolina State Board of Elections. We've also heard today from Ben Thompson, anchor at WCNC-TV and host of Flashpoint, and Dr. Chris Cooper, professor of political science and director of the Public Policy Institute at Western Carolina University. Thank you all for the hour.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. The senior producers are Gabe Altieri and Sarah D'Elia. Our engineer is Joby Sprinkle. For more information about Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.